This is Sports Jam. I'm your host, Doug Doyle. Now that the NHL lockout is over, it's time to get back to business for my guest, Hall of Fame play-by-play announcer Mike Lang of the Pittsburgh Penguins. During the holidays, we got together in the North Hill section of Pittsburgh for this special interview. On this edition of Sports Jam, it's something that a lot of people don't get a chance to do. You get a chance to interview someone you have idolized all your life. For me, it's Pittsburgh Penguins announcer Mike Lang, a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame, and a legend here, not only in Pittsburgh, but in the National Hockey League, and everyone who has had a chance to listen to Mike. Thanks so much for giving me a few minutes here on Sports Jam and sitting down with me.
Well, I just have a lot of fun talking with people, and I have for the years that I've been involved in broadcasting, and I'm honored that you even considered talking to me, so it's going to be a good time.
Mike, I like to think of your career as a hat trick, since your specialty is hockey, even though you have done all the sports throughout your long career. But I like to look at it as timing, transition, and talent. It was great timing for you at different parts of your career. You had to have transition because you went from different sports early on in your career. You weren't even necessarily exposed to hockey until late in your college career. And then the talent came through and made you the legend that you are today. Does that sum up Mike Lang's career before we get into the specifics?
It's probably a pretty accurate synopsis, I think, of probably what I've done. Probably a lot of broadcasters would fit in that category, too, from where they start and how they come along and what steps that they take. I mean, when you look back on your career, you look at key moments, and for me, knowing from the time I was 9 years old that what I wanted to do, so that kind of was a blessing there on a start, where most kids today have still no idea what they want to do, and even people that work many, many jobs still have no conception of what something that they love and have a passion for, and I try and steer them into that. Try and find something. Money will come to you if you become good at something. But having said all that, I knew what I wanted to do when I was very young. So I kind of put the path together that I was going to work with and listen to a lot of broadcasters and kind of made my own way. And when I eventually got into the business after college, I was fortunate to go to Phoenix, Arizona and work with a gentleman by the name of Al McCoy, who is the voice of the Phoenix Suns still to this day. And he was my mentor. And I was able to take over for him after 1 year and broadcast Phoenix Roadrunner games in the old Western Hockey League. And that probably was the key turning point for me as far as really understanding the game of hockey or professional sports or broadcasting and how to approach it. And I was very fortunate to be on his backside, if you will, and to watch and learn. And from that, I kind of grew into what I wanted to be. And it kind of mushroomed when I finally got to Pittsburgh. And I came to the right place for me because I always wanted to be somewhat of a different type of broadcaster with the phrases that I use and things. And when I came to Pittsburgh, it was as if the man upstairs said, listen, I have a place for you. We have Rosie Rolleswell. We have Bob Prince. We have Myron Cope. We have all these legendary guys that were unique and different. He said, I think you'll fit here. And so when I came here, it actually was a match made in heaven for me. I didn't think I'd be here more than 1 year, and I've ended up here almost 40 years in Pittsburgh.
Penguins do finally get out, but they've wasted a lot of time, and great penalty killing by the Blues. Now the Pens into the Blues end. Here's Malkin with a shot. He shoots and scores from outside the right wing circle, and the Penguins take the lead 3-2. Oh, getting a fast lane, Grandma. That bingo game is ready to roll. Evgeny Malkin with a blistering slapper.
I've interviewed so many people here on Sports Jam, but for my family and for my friends, when I mentioned that Mike Lang was going to be on the show, everybody said, please tell Mike I said hi. Wish we could be there with you. That we all love you here in Pittsburgh, Mike, and throughout the National Hockey League. It is the Langisms that we'll get into, but you talked about in the past having a feel for the game, learning from Al Conway, having a feel for the game, and you talked about building a book. Can you describe that to our listeners?
Yeah, I honestly think that, especially radio-wise, and television kind of helps you in that regard, but even with it, you can kind of build a sense and a feel for the game, and you learn it from experience in watching games, and I think that's one of the key ingredients, I think, to success in anything you do, and not only broadcasting, but other things, is learn to anticipate. If you can learn to anticipate, you're way ahead of the game in situations, and that in broadcasting is as true as it is in anything else. And so if you can get a feel for what might happen, you can kind of gear yourself. Maybe voice-wise, maybe that emotion, and you just kind of feel and go with the flow, and you can kind of build a book, if you will, and get to it, particularly with radio. And you can have a great finish. You hope it is. I mean, you hope the game presents itself as such. But those are kind of the things that you look for during the course of a game that give you that moment where you can kind of move in a little different direction. Raise your voice, lower your voice. And a lot of it comes natural after a while, after you learn to do it.
Right point to Gonchar, wrist shot, blocked in front, Malone fires it, bounce stopped in front, loose puck, big ones have it, there it is, Crosby, he gets the goal, his second, and you can slap me, silly Cindy, the Penguins lead 2-0, Crosby, the power play goal.
And again, I go back to just listening to key people like Bill King in San Francisco and some others, and even Vince Scully, that I grew up with, and others that just kind of led me in that direction of how to use your voice and how to feel the moment. And so I've been fortunate to be able to kind of transcend that and work with it during my course of broadcasting games.
So now I'm getting a chance to talk with someone who I've idolized and listened to calling Penguin games for so many years. You didn't get a chance to meet Bill King, right?
No, I didn't, unfortunately, and I had on several occasions was going back to California. My family is from there, and was going to go to an Oakland A's game, but every time I got the schedule set up, he was doing A's games at the time, late in his career, they were out of town, and I never got that opportunity, and I really was something I wanted to do, and I'm kicking myself. It's one of those moments you look back on your life, and I always wanted to see Muhammad Ali fight. That, and I never did that, you know. So and now Bill King, and so little things that you say to yourself, darn. So if you have a few folks at home, if you ever have a premonition about wanting to see something or do something, you know what I'm going to tell you right now: do it, because it'll be something that you won't have to look back on and say, I wish I would have done that. But those are the key things. And he was a great broadcaster, really strong, and particularly in basketball. I used to love to listen to him, and they're all influences on me. I mean, from when, and I'm glad to say, and I'm happy to say that they definitely are.
The Langisms that everybody talks about, your famous phrases that are so clever and so much fun for the listeners, you develop those through just talking to people, right?
A lot of it does come from people that I listen to. People presented things to me. They've written them down. I've listened. I've heard people say things. The little scratch my back with a hacksaw was from a little security guard at a strip mall where I was looking for a place to do a commercial. They had a place out there one day, and he was about 75 years old, and he was just out there like Barney Fife working the desk, the kiosk, and he says, he knew I was lost. He knew I couldn't find my way. He says, Mike. And I said, and I'm kind of over Mike, and he says, how are you doing? He said, you're trying to find us. I said, yeah, and he explained where it was. And then he said, do you take phrases? I said, yeah, I take phrases. I said, write them down. Everything's under consideration. In those days, I used to have a big shoebox. True. And so he said, well, let me write it down. And he started to write it, and he wrote, scratch my back. That went up. That started me with a hacksaw. I didn't even have to go any further. Didn't even have to finish hacksaw. I knew it was going to work.
Oh, scratch my back with a hacksaw.
We had a contest here for Iron City Beer in the early 90s where people were sending in to win a prize, and we took the best phrase that we used, and one that was terrific, and I still use it to this day, was shave my face with a rusty razor. And that was on a beer can and with other phrases, too. And I'm honored to have somebody send that in and be able to use it and what they did.
Do you have a favorite?
That's one of the most asked questions that I get from everybody. I really deliver, take a lot of time in determining whether or not I'm going to use a phrase, a new one or whatever. And so, quite honestly, I won't use it unless I really, really am sold on it, and they become my favorites, all of them. And I mean that sincerely. Every single one is the one. Now, as far as the fans are concerned, what they think about them, then I'll let them be the judge as far as what their favorites are. But to me, every single one, and I mean this sincerely, is a favorite to me and one that I want to use on the air.
The phrases aren't just the things that have made you special. When I've listened to you call a game, and especially in the early days, it's the he shoots and scores. When you go to he, my face lights up because obviously as a Penguin fan, you know a goal is coming up. But that's the excitement that you build up there that to hear that. To me, it's all a part of what Mike Lang has done. He has made hockey exciting. The Penguins weren't always a good team when Mike Lang was a play-by-play announcer. Then came along number 66, and everything kind of changed.
Out right side, Murphy shooting, save, made rebound on the view. Hey! Shoots that scores! Mario Lemieux and the Penguins lead 5-4, and you'd have to be here to believe it. Mario Lemieux has given the Penguins the lead.
Watching Mario Lemieux play and calling his games for all those years, those who weren't in Pittsburgh probably don't understand. There's the Wayne Gretzky, the Gordie Howe lovers, but those who've watched Mario, I can't think of anybody who dominated the game as much as he did. How much fun was it for you calling Mario Lemieux's name night in and night out?
Well, let me just turn this around just a little bit, that a certain player thinks that Mario Lemieux is the greatest player that ever played the game. You talk about domination. This player dominated. He was, to me, the best player that ever played the game, and his name is Bobby Orr. So Mario, without question in my mind, was the greatest passer that the game has ever seen. This is all God-given natural ability for Mario. Made the most pure goal scorer. He was the biggest physical specimen that the league had anybody had ever seen, with that much talent and that much ability to skate, the smoothness of how he approached and worked the game. He was just something to behold, night after night after night. And playing with all the adversity that he had, with the injuries and the cancer and everything, is truly remarkable what he accomplished in his career. It's unfortunate, as it was with Bobby Orr, that basically injuries really shortened his career, because he both men were just superb in their approach to the game and how they played it. But Mario gave us so many thrills. How blessed can Pittsburghers be? I mean, really, they've seen Mario, they've seen Yager, they've seen Francis, they've seen Paul Coffey. The list goes on and on and on. And now Sid Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. I mean, it's almost unfair, the great players that they've had come through here. And hopefully for Pittsburgh fans, they'll appreciate that. You hope that it isn't going to be 50 years from now when they look back and say, like, wow, can you believe all the great players we had? Yeah, they in a short period of time, really in 25, 30 years, they've had among the top players in all of hockey in the world. So they've been very blessed here in the city.
We're speaking with the great Mike Lang here on Sports Jam. Mike, because of the lean years and with Mario's emergence, when did you know that this team had a chance to win the Stanley Cup? And what did it mean to you to be a part of the Stanley Cup champions in the 90s?
Well, I think after the long trek, if you will, and all the ins and outs of whether or not this team was even going to be here in the 80s, the losses. But I think, you know, quite honestly, I think I wouldn't say that it was the turning point or what I thought. But when the Penguins really lost a lot of games in the early 80s, were the dog of the league. At that point, because of the draft, if you don't throw it away, you're going to have an opportunity to become a better hockey club. And they used it wisely. They hadn't before. They had traded away first-round draft choices to keep the franchise afloat. But they did keep it. And Mario was the selection. And I think most fans may not be aware of this, but there was quite a uproar, really, at the time when Mario was drafted as to whether or not he should be the number one pick. Not so much from a Pittsburgh standpoint, but Kirk Muller was the number two pick that year. And most hockey people, and they won't admit this now, but most hockey people were leaning towards Kirk Muller as being the top pick, and the reason is because Brian Trottier was so successful with the New York Islanders, and he was in that mold. And no question, Trottier is one of the greatest players that ever played the game. So, but I don't think people realize, and a lot of people still, I mean, at that time, thought Mario might have been kind of a lazy player. And I'm just telling you from what happened, but people don't even remember this. But Eddie Johnston, the general manager, stepped up and took Mario. There was even a controversy at that time, and there isn't any question that he made the right choice. And for Mario, it's a great choice because he would have lived in New Jersey instead of Pittsburgh. So I'm kidding now, folks. I'm kidding. So he came.
He's taking a shot of the Garden State here.
Yeah, no, I'm not really. I'm not really. So he ends up in Pittsburgh, and I think the rest is pretty much history. In fact, he's become such an integral part of the city. It's scary. He could be the mayor here easily. By default, because he does so much for charity and the things that he has done with his foundation and has kept such an active role with the Penguins, too. So he's a great story and a great individual.
You realize you're almost talking about yourself there as someone who's been big in Pittsburgh, charity work. But you think about it, Mike, you are connected with the Penguins. That when people think about the Penguins, they think about Mario, they think about Jagr and the players that you've already mentioned in Sydney, but most people think about Mike Lang.
Well, that you know what that is? That's age. That's because he's been around so darn long that they can hopefully can turn on something and that he's there and broadcasting a game. So I've been blessed, too. I mean, as I said, way back when we were talking earlier, I didn't anticipate that I would be in Pittsburgh more than a year, maybe two, and I just fell in love with the place. And it grows on you.
What is it about Pittsburgh?
I think the people certainly are just as special as anything you could imagine. They go out of their way to help one another, and I think that's what makes it tick. I think I've lived in a lot of cities, obviously. Again. Having traveled, I lived in Phoenix, which is a pretty friendly city, but Pittsburgh is a very, very friendly city, and the loyalty here is maybe second to none. If you play for the Steelers, or you play for the Pirates, or you play for the Penguin, I don't care if you play 10 games. You're by right of Pittsburghers. You're there. You are their player, and till the day you depart this earth, that's the way they feel about you. So that's the loyalty that you try and give them, and that they give back to you too. And it's kind of a good mesh that we've all put together here in Pittsburgh, and it works for everybody.
You're listening to Sports Jam on WBGO, Jazz 88.3 FM and WBGO.org. My guest tonight is broadcasting legend Mike Lang of the Pittsburgh Penguins, who was singing the blues, you could say, during the NHL lockout, but he's now ready for the shortened NHL season. For Mike, though, it's not just all about sports.
What are some of the passions Mike Lang has outside of hockey?
Well, Mike Lang loves the blues. He loves the music, and that probably is something that that I cherish as much as anything. I just enjoy it. I will go to see live bands. I will have traveled numerous places in Mississippi and Alabama, even and down into Tennessee to go to juke joints where the old music was played, and so these are things that really kind of appeal to me. You know, I met Bob Prince, who was a big broadcaster for the Pirates for many, many years, and he told me about Pittsburgh when I first came here, and that was he was amazing how much he helped me. But he said, you should have been here in the 50s in the Hill District. He said it was the most unbelievable place, and that was a lot of jazz, but a lot of other music. He said, you go up there, and you could dance, and you could music all night and everything, and I'm saying, maybe I'm like 20 years ahead of where I should have been, you know? That type of thing, but I'm more than satisfied with the music that I have and have had during the course of my life. But that's a strong passion for me. It really is.
If you could go back in time to see a certain artist play the blues, maybe it is the 50s, maybe it is the Hill District in Pittsburgh. Who would it be? And talk about that a little bit.
Well, I would have loved to have seen Muddy Waters and that group. I mean, they just fascinated me from the music and how it kind of really changed.
Inside my mojo working, but it just won't work on you. Got my mojo working, but it just won't work on you. I wanna love you so bad, I don't know what.
I think even if you go back, I never saw Elvis play either, but I think I would have loved to have seen Elvis in person. And I had that opportunity once here in Pittsburgh, and that was when I first came here, and I didn't go again. But I did see Frank Sinatra, and that was worth every bit of it. But I think those guys from the 50s, the rock and rollers, the guys that kind of inspired everybody and kept it going. If you go back to the 40s even, is where the real kind of New York, the blues joints were starting there. I think even in Harlem and along those lines there probably was just dynamite, because I know that even the rock and roll people talk about that, borrowing from that. So that era would have been really something for me to see. Willie Dixon, I would have loved to have seen him play.
Slim, the girl razor toting Jim, the girl a butcher knife toting Nanny, the girl fast talking Fanny. Are we gonna pitch a ball down to the Legion Hall? We gonna romp and trump till midnight. We gonna fuss and fight till daylight. We gonna pitch a wang dang doodle all night long.
What is it about the blues?
To me, it moves me. It moves me. It'll actually move my, I know it sounds crazy and stupid, but it'll move my spine. It'll move my body. It'll make me just feel at ease and feel just a tremendous appreciation for what people do. I think the musicians are just pretty special people. I mean, I was fortunate to play an instrument. I played a clarinet when I was younger. But it's just, you get, I don't know if it's an appreciation. I also think that, quite honestly, we're all divided into different categories. And I think people that are listening, and yourself would be in the same category as me. There are audio people, there are visual people, and there's a combination of both. And to me, I'm more of an audio person. I think you would be in that group too, Doug. Most people in our business are in that group. And you relate so easily to those people. And so musicians are very much audio-oriented, and I think that's probably why we kind of gravitate into that and why we feel such a strong rapport with it. So that it gives you a peace of mind, and I think anybody that listens to music or listening to us right now knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's something that it's hard to explain, but it's simple to you when you do hear good music, and it makes your day a little better.
We've heard it so much on Sports Jam, the connection of sports and music. Marty LaQuarrie is a recent guest and all his days at ABC Sports, but now he's a jazz guitarist. And sometimes when you talk to these people, you think that they like performing jazz better than they enjoyed their career.
Yeah, no question. I mentioned Al McCoy, who's with the Phoenix Suns, and Al's a longtime jazz enthusiast. And I'm more on the blues side, but he still plays the piano, and he's very strong and oriented to music. And I don't think it's unusual for us to be broadcasters and be drawn to that field. Maybe with a want to, if I didn't do this, maybe I would have wanted to do that. And I think when you meet musicians, they're somewhat envious of what you do as a broadcaster. So it's kind of it's an equalizer, and it's kind of rewarding when you tell them, man, I wish I could play like you, and they go, well, I wish I could do games, and it's just fun to work with them and be around that whole scene. To me, it really is.
We're speaking with Mike Lang here on Sports Jam. Mike, not only in the NFL but in the NHL. Concussions have become a huge topic of discussion, and with Sidney Crosby having his issues over the past couple of years, where does this sport, where does it go? It has to be a violent sport. Hockey is violent just like football is.
Yeah, and that's part of it is the equipment. It's become so hard shell, if you will, in a lot of ways for protection for the player playing the game, but it also is kind of a, I don't want to say a weapon. I don't think that's a fair assessment, but it's an offensive battleground out there when you've got elbow pads that are as hard as any titanium type of thing you could possibly beat on, hitting another body time and time again, not by maybe design, but just the collision part of it. So you've got a fine line there. I mean, the older equipment were guys that was not quite as hard, not quite as protective, but it also had more give than what we see, I think, in some of the equipment that's out there today. I think probably you're going to see somewhere along the line some type of helmet that'll be designed that will absorb punishment. But even that, I mean, they have to build, when you think about it, motorcycle drivers have to have probably the most expensive, probably, and the best helmets that anybody could wear. And they're not always foolproof as far as for protecting one. So, yes, it is the sport that it tends to have more collisions than most, and I think that both sports are going to try to address it as best they can. But if you talk to players on both leagues, they consider themselves to be gladiators, basically, and to me that's what I have found over the years. And they're willing to accept that fact that they are the guys that are fighting the lions, and they accept that risk, and they'll play under those terms for the better part of it because they love it. And I think that's probably will always be there, and why we will have both sports be very active.
And you love them both. I know you go to a lot of Steeler games. When it comes to, you were inducted in the Hall of Fame many years ago. That's one moment for you. But what moment, if you have to think back, creates the most joy for Mike Lang?
Well, you know what? I've told this story before, but people have asked me about the greatest moment in Penguin history that I've been around. It's not a cup win. It actually is the celebration of the life of Bob Johnson, the coach that got the Penguins their first Stanley Cup. We had a tribute to him. He died from a brain tumor. After the year the Penguins won the Cup, and they had a candlelight vigil on a game here in Pittsburgh at the Civic Arena. And to me, that was the most moving moment of my life, really, to see the outpour of emotion from the fans, the players. There wasn't a person in there that didn't have a tear in his eye, but not from sadness, from actual probably appreciation of what he accomplished and did. And it was one of those moments where it just took your breath away, and you felt rejuvenated and you felt good. And it was it was just the most moving moment in Penguin history. I know it hasn't got anything to do with hockey on the ice per se, but it does have an awful lot to do maybe with the game and the way we've seen it, and the friendships and the feeling that you have for people that you build over the years. So to me, that was a very, very moving moment.
Have you told that to Mark, his son?
I don't know if I have told that to Mark. I don't believe I have. I have mentioned it before, but I have not directly talked to Mark about it. That whole family is just such a wonderful family. But you remind me, if I do, I will tell him that. Yes, I will. Thanks, Dougie.
You got it. Yeah. Now, Hall of Fame, because it was, you're still a young guy, Mike, but you were in the Hall of Fame in 2001. The career just keeps building and building, and new parts of, you've done television, you've done radio. You mentioned you're an audio type of guy. Would you still like to be doing the TV side?
Yeah, well, you know, eventually you never know. I mean, this business goes up and down, and it moves people around. Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's always a part of what you're available for, if that were the case. Things change. I mean, there's no question. I mean, the business has actually changed. I'm kind of hoping a little bit between you and I, and this is good for you, Doug, that the radio kind of makes a bigger comeback, you know?
Let's hope so.
Yes, sir, because, I mean, it does have so much to offer. It's got that intrigue. I think if you went back, for you folks listening, if you could find some old radio shows and just understand what was involved to put those shows on, how big they were. You know, we have people here that are, I'm going off on a tangent now, we have people here that are stars in television and work in that, but those days of radio when it first started, and it hasn't been around 100 years. I mean, it has not even been around 100 years. But those people were so gigantic as far as the star power, if you will, and what they had. And it's kind of fascinating to go back. And if you get a chance, you know, go to YouTube or go to that and look up old radio shows and do yourself a favor and have some fun. You'll laugh at the commercials maybe more than anything else when you hear those things. But you'll be intrigued, I think, by it and the work that had to go into it, the sound effects and everything that was involved. It's truly amazing. When I did college baseball, we did games from a teletype, and that's everybody's kind of heard that story. Yeah. But we did. We actually had a teletype, and we also had somebody that was there would call and tell us what happened inning by inning, and so we would recreate the game in the studio and work with it. And we had our bat, and we had everything that we would use. But those are just things that are kind of, I think, interesting to the folks that follow broadcasting. And if you want to do yourself a favor and have some fun, go back and look up some old radio shows.
As we wrap up this edition of Sports Jam here in the North Hills section of Pittsburgh, where Mike calls home, you can tell there's a love of Bobby Orr and Mario Lemieux when you talk about them. Is there somebody else you work with, Phil Bork, on the radio, who's always been one of the unsung heroes of the Stanley Cup champion Penguin players? Is there somebody out there that has touched Mike's heart that's been in the league that maybe didn't get the recognition, or at least people don't know enough about?
That's a pretty good question. You know, there's a gentleman by the name of Max McNabb who helped me immeasurably in getting a chance to work in the National Hockey League. He's now passed on, but his son, Peter, is involved in hockey, played the game. I knew Max way back when I was in San Diego doing games. He was a very special person to me as far as guidance and helping to do things. I'm looking at people today around this sport. I think probably one of the guys that probably is never hardly mentioned but had so much to do with the success of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and I found him to be just the opposite of what everybody said he was Ed DeMarto Sr. I found him to be a really incredible gentleman, astute, and such a fan of the Penguins that nobody even really realized it. And his whole family, Marie included, and her husband that owned the 49ers right now, and Eddie Jr. Eddie was probably more into the football side of it, but that family surprised me and had really an eye-opening experience after we won the first cup to go and see him and be summoned to his office, and found it to be completely different than what anybody anticipated that would be. So those are special moments. There are a lot of great people in the game of hockey. There's tremendous people, even in baseball too. I think of Steve Blass, who is a great pitcher for the Pirates and now broadcaster too, a dear friend. And a guy that I just cherish and love to death as a person. So there's been a lot of good people. And now I've met Doug Doyle, and it's even better. Yeah,
you're too kind, Mike. When you talk about great people, and you've just made this sport so much fun. Don't ever think about retiring, by the way. You have to be the Penguins announcer forever. So from cousins Keith and Lisa, from my brother Don and sister Jan, from my nephews, Mike, John, and Heather, and all our families, we love you, and we're thrilled that you've been here on Sports Jam to find out a little bit more what makes Mike Lang tick off the ice.
Well, you know it's been my pleasure, and I'm just, for all those names you ticked off, what I want to know is, how much fried chicken can you eat? Thanks for having me, Ducky.
You're the best.
Big save by Flurry, and it is! That's it! The Pittsburgh Penguins have won this hockey game! The Penguins have won the Stanley Cup, and Lord Stanley, scratch their names on your fabled cup! The Pittsburgh Penguins are Stanley Cup champions 2009!
Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis has just left the building!
Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. Our executive producer is Thurston Briscoe. Special thanks this week to the morning maestro, Gary Walker, for his help with the music. You can hear all the podcast versions of the show by going to WBGO.org/Sports Jam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on iTunes. Join me next Wednesday night at 7:30 for another session. Until then, I'll see you at the game.